As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to this edition of the Shamrock Live. I'm Pete Sampson, as I posted in the chat. I'm coming to you from the second floor of the Raleigh-Durham Fairfield Inn. There is hurricane winds. Might be exaggerating a bit, starting to amass outside my hotel room. But wanted to get in a quick chat. Sorry about the late start. Usually we're going to try to stick to noon for these things. It did not work in my favor today with the travel getting out of South Bend. So if you got a question, you can definitely post it in the chat, or I'd love to hear from you straight away. You can ask it in the queue. I'll call you to the stage. You can ask it there, and then, yeah, we can chat about whatever you guys want to, about tomorrow's game or whatever else is on your mind with Notre Dame heading to NC State on Saturday. We can probably go for about 30, 40 minutes and see what you guys want to chat about today. I guess with nobody in the queue quite yet, I'll just hop in for the questions in the chat, and the first one's from Colin V, and he wants to know, do we win if Sam Hartman throws 48 times in the rain? Colin, I'm pretty sure you know the answer to that is absolutely not. And it was interesting sort of going over the narrative this week that got put out there about, oh, Sam Hartman struggles against NC State and Tony Gibson's defense and the 3-3-5 and all of that stuff. And it's like when you pull back the stats a little bit, you see, okay, he threw, I think, 95 passes in his last two starts against NC State. So if you're averaging, 47.5 passes per game, I don't care if it's dry conditions, perfect field, or it's whatever the heck Notre Dame is going to play in tomorrow, that's not a successful formula. And I think the thing that got lost a little bit this week on sort of the NC State history storyline was just like, Notre Dame's not going to ask Hartman to do that. He's not running Wake Forest offense anymore. He's handing the ball to Audric Estime. He's being blocked for by Joe Ault. Notre Dame is built completely different than whatever Wake Forest could put out there offensively. And that should be a winning formula for Notre Dame tomorrow if the offensive line plays well. But if Notre Dame somehow falters, I really do not think that Sam Hartman's history with NC State is going to have anything to do with it at all. Let's see, we got Super G wants to know, is this running game good enough if weather impacts the pass game? I want to say yes, because I think Notre Dame's running backs are good enough. And I think as a run-blocking unit, Notre Dame's offensive line is more than good enough to sort of keep NC State on its heels a little bit, especially with the amount of 12 personnel that Notre Dame can throw out there. And I think it's kind of one of those things where NC State does not see a lot of Mitchell Evans and Holden Stays together in the ACC. They certainly are not going to run into tight ends of that caliber, when they played UConn last weekend. So I think it's not just the running backs. It's probably more of the run game, which is how you ask the question. Because I do think that if Notre Dame needs to grind out short yardage backs, like very quietly, Audric Estime and Jabron Payne have turned into reliable short yardage backs for Notre Dame. And I do think Notre Dame will be good enough to sort of handle their business if they get into third and one, third and two. You know, Jeremiah Love, is he somebody you put in there in short yards? Probably not. But Notre Dame should have more than enough material to handle their business, I think, tomorrow on the ground. Again, if you want to ask a question, I'll call you to the stage. You just have to hit the ask question in the queue, or you can, you know, post in the chat. Kevin M. wants to know, it's hard to imagine a game where multiple position groups look really encouraging and Notre Dame doesn't win by 10-plus points. Of course, things can fluctuate and get screwy, but am I missing something otherwise? I don't think that you are, Kevin. And I think it's especially true with Notre Dame's offensive line, which I don't think played nearly as well as the box score would have indicated last week. I thought they were solid against Navy, but, you know, Blake Fisher in particular has so much room for growth from the Tennessee State game to the NC State game. And it's not that like every position group has to play well for Notre Dame to win by 10 points, but if you just got both lines playing well, the offensive line handling their business in a way that they did somewhat inconsistently last week, but then the defensive line not letting Brennan Armstrong look like Caleb Williams last year, where they're blowing right by him on pass rush opportunities. They're opening holes for scrambling for a quarterback who rushed 19 times against Connecticut. So I think if both lines play well, everything else will sort of take care of itself and Notre Dame will win by 10 plus points. I mean, we've all watched Notre Dame games where, not many, but there have been games where Notre Dame has been better on both lines and lost. But usually those games involved Denard Robinson or a Big Ten officiating crew. And that shouldn't be the case on Saturday at NC State. So I'm with you, Kevin, that I think that is, if Notre Dame plays well in all phases, they will win going away. And if they just play well on the lines, I still think they will win by 10 points and cover. Stephen O. wants to know, do you expect NC State to sell out on stopping the deep ball? That's a good question. I don't know what they will do. What I anticipate from NC State tomorrow defensively, yeah, they're multiple, and they will make Notre Dame's offensive line and run game sort of identify different fronts. And I talked to Jared Parker about this during the week about how NC State does a good job of sort of muddying the picture a little bit. You're not quite sure what you're seeing. But I think the sort of the sneaky angle here that I'm curious to track tomorrow is how aggressive NC State's corners get with Notre Dame's receivers, because they haven't really been pressed at all this season. You know, and that makes sense because the athletes at Navy and the athletes at Tennessee State just don't have the material to press Notre Dame. They'll just be a losing proposition. NC State's corners are pretty good. You know, how does Deion Colsey, how does Jaden Greathouse in his first road game, Rico Flores first road game? I don't have any concerns about Jaden Thomas handling press coverage, but it's the everybody else that I think will be interesting to see how that shakes out. Because I really think that Notre Dame's receivers getting press coverage, not that it necessarily needs to be a weakness of theirs, but we don't know if it's a strength yet. All right, I'm going to go to the queue, and Scott B. has got a question. So, Scott B., I am calling you to the stage to ask your question, but I do not see it calling you up. So, Scott B., if you're still with us, hop in the queue again. I will call you up again. Scott B., you're there. Scott B., can you hear me?
Good afternoon, Pete. My question was, can you see a scenario play out Saturday where our defense continues to hold opponents without a touchdown?
Well, as I see the tree outside me bending sideways and lightning coming down, I guess that would be one scenario. Hopefully that's not what it takes to do, you know, to hold an opponent out of the end zone. I would be surprised if NC State didn't score a singular touchdown. I definitely could see a scenario where NC State doesn't get over 10 to 13 points. I would be shocked if Notre Dame got picked apart defensively. I think this defense is better than what I thought in the preseason. It's way better than what I thought in the offseason. I'm talking about January, March, spring practice time. So that's why, you know, famous last words, I'll knock on my formica desk here at the Fairfield here. But I just don't see a way that NC State is going to be able to score more than 21 points or 20 points. And I think Notre Dame offensively is going to be good enough and competent enough to hold up their end of the bargain there. So is there any way? Yeah, I guess if you had a pick six in there, but that's not really what you're asking. You're asking, could the defense hold up? And if they hold up, what would that look like? And two touchdowns, maybe two touchdowns and a field goal. So that's really, I feel like this is going to be a race to 21 or 24 for Notre Dame offensively, because as soon as they get there, I have a difficult time seeing NC State keeping pace. Alex W. asked, this feels like a game champion contenders win easily. Is there a final score that would make you think this team is a legit title contender? I don't think so, only because if it was just a butt-whooping, I think I would have to come away thinking like, ooh, NC State might actually be bad. Not that Notre Dame would get no credit in a scenario like that. I would temper it a little bit. I think that title contender is such a long way off. I do think there's stuff we can see tomorrow that would make me think that Notre Dame is going to or has a great shot to beat Ohio State, which is different than what I felt like in the summer or the spring. You know, and those things would be the offensive line owns the line of scrimmage for Notre Dame. I would say a deep ball threat has emerged at receiver. I don't think it's going to be Tobias Merriweather after the last 2 weeks, but you know, maybe that's Deion Colsey on third down. Maybe it's, you know, Jaden Greyhouse doing a little bit more than we've seen. So I need to see Notre Dame beat a team in a way that is more than just power running game and Audric Estime and having a running back juke two linebackers in the flat like Jerrion Price did and Jeremiah Love did last week. Like, that's what I would like to see, the receiver position rise up and do something that it hasn't done all year, which just like, you know, win some competitive catches. I guess Jaden Thomas's touchdown against Navy, Jaden Greathouse's first touchdown maybe would qualify, but to do that against NC State would show me a little bit of something. And then, you know, defensively, I'm not really sure. You know, the linebackers are what they are and the corners are what they are. I think they're both really, really good position groups. But I'm not sure if those groups are going to really blow me out of the water tomorrow and do something that's going to change my opinion about NC State meaning something for Ohio State. But I do think, and if you watched the game last week, and I'm sure everyone did, like, I do think Javonte Jean-Baptiste is taking steps forward now that would lead you to believe that he can be the second most impactful transfer on the team after Hartman. He looks more like a big time defensive end is supposed to look in flashes. So if that turns into more of like a consistent all afternoon flash, I don't know what that would be, a flash, just a beam, that might lead me to believe that, okay, Notre Dame has more in the tank to beat Ohio State, because you're going to have to create and disrupt the Ohio State passing game without blitzing a ton and leaving yourself exposed to the back end of the defense. So if we see a big game from Javonte Jean-Baptiste tomorrow, or maybe you see Josh Burnham beat somebody one-on-one, those would be the kinds of things I'd be watching that make me think, again, like title contender is, it's just like kind of an abstraction to me here on September 8th, but a legit threat to beat Ohio State. I'm not talking about like you need a fake field goal to beat Ohio State, or you need a plus or minus three or plus three turnover margin to beat Ohio State. I'm saying toe-to-toe, boom, punch them in the mouth and come out of that game on top. That, I think there's stuff we can see tomorrow that would lead you to believe that's a possibility. All right, Zach S., I see you in the queue. Zach S., I'm calling you to the stage. All right, I see you up.
Question for you. How many catches does Tobias Merriweather need to be able to get Tim Priester off his back on the next Irish Illustrated Insiders episode?
Ooh, how many catches? I would say that the bar is maybe lower than you think. I think if he had four catches, that would be enough. But they can't be four catches like his catches last week. I mean, I think that the first catch that he had against Tennessee State did not shine of a super confident kid out there. It's like, the ball, he sort of caught the ball with his body, 1 yard, fell down. What I need to see from Tobias Merriweather is to go up and make a competitive catch in the flat. I don't know if this week is the week for it. If my hunch would be he is a bit of an outlier this week, you know, sort of maybe the sixth receiver in the rotation. And then Central Michigan is the time you can rebuild that. Maybe Notre Dame gets up and they can force the issue with Tobias, because they need him to be a legit, if not wide receiver one, wide receiver two, or wide receiver three. And right now it feels like he's more of like a blocker who, you know, tries to get out there, and, you know, they're trying to force the issue, but I don't know if tomorrow is the time for that. But I would say if Tobias Merriweather has four catches, we'll see how the Irish Illustrated Insider podcast goes with Tim and Tim. And then we can reconvene the Shamrock Live next week and reassess what happened. All right, Tim B., I'm calling you to the stage. You are next up on the Shamrock Live. Go ahead with your question.
You've mentioned Blake Fisher having issues. What are the specific of his issues, and how does he fix them?
It was really weird to watch the game a little bit more in slow-mo last week and watch Blake Fisher struggle. There were times where it looked like he was unsure of the play call. Like, he would step forward when the play would be not, you know, going to his right. And he needed to, like, get out and kick out a defender. There was also a snap in the second half that really seemed bizarre to me, where a defensive tackle from Tennessee State cut inside, got to Blake, like, popped him in the chest. And then instead of, like, you know, really holding his ground, he leans forward. He loses his balance. This defensive tackle does a swim move on him and just absolutely destroys Steve Angeli. If you're looking for this play to rewatch it yourself, it's at 9:57 of the third quarter. And for a guy that, I mean, God knows I've described him as a, you know, future NFL defensive tackle or offensive tackle. Like, it was just kind of the player, just it left you confused about how this could happen to somebody like Blake Fisher. I think it was number five, so it may have been more their big defensive end, who was a good player. But the inability to stay in front of your man was strange. So I think it's a mix of technical and tactical issues with Blake. At least it was last week. We've all seen him play way better than this, and that's why I don't feel like it needs to be an alarm bell. I think Blake Fisher is more of a kid that this week you'll see a bounce-back performance than this being the beginning of a negative trend. But if you want to watch this play in particular, it's at 9:57 of the third quarter. It's 35-3. Steve Angeli is in. And you watch it and think, like, how in the world, like, what are the physics of being able to throw a 310-pound man aside like that and then just rip by him? But it's something that Fishers get cut out because Notre Dame can't afford that, one, just to keep the run game going. But two, when the quarterback is Sam Hartman, you don't want him taking shots like that at all. All right, next question. We'll go Daniel K. How is NC State's nickelback? There's a lot of talk of the starting quarterbacks for NC State, but is Notre Dame slot versus the third nickel a matchup advantage? That's a good question. I don't have enough scouting knowledge of NC State's secondary depth to know, but this was something that I wrote about in my final thoughts earlier in the week, and that's maybe Notre Dame doesn't have a true number one wide receiver. And as much as I've been sort of pounding the table for, like, they've got to have a number one, you got to have a number one, you got to have a number one, maybe they don't. And I say that in the sense of, like, if you have four number twos, really, that's not an ideal situation. But if your quarterback is as smart as Sam Hartman, he's going to find the number two who's matched up against the number three corner or the number four corner or the number two safety. I think that's where Notre Dame can sort of live with not having an elite receiver play, only because they have a incredibly smart and savvy quarterback who can find the matchup where Notre Dame's receiver is better than the corner they're going against. I think, and that's why I'm interested tomorrow to sort of see, do they pick on the nickel with Chris Tyree or Jaden Greathouse? Because NC State's starting corners are both quite good. And if Notre Dame, if they're getting pressed, if they can't find space to maneuver, what's your counter to that if you're Jared Parker? What's your counter to that if you're Sam Hartman? I do think it's the Tyree Greathouse combination at nickel has a chance to, you know, be, I think, very, very productive against NC State's. And again, if the weather's not good, are you taking deep shots anyway? Probably not. That's a matchup tomorrow. Is like, how do they get the nickel matched up? Do they look for that as a mismatch? Because as good as I think NC State's two starting corners are good, I'm not sure that their nickel, like a lot of these programs that aren't like Alabama or Georgia, they may have one or two good corners, but rarely do they have three or four. So when you get those matchups, how do you try to take advantage of them? That's something that I'm going to be fascinated to watch on Saturday. All right. Richard G wants to know, went to Dublin, and before the second half started, I watched Hartman warm up from 30 to 40 yards away, and he was catching the throwback himself. I wanted to run down on the field and catch it and hand it to him. Something or nothing? Probably nothing. I think Sam Hartman likes to have fun on the sidelines. I watched him a lot in the second half. I missed that part. I was more of the backwards cap baseball Sam Hartman throwing passes around with Kenny Minchie.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Brandon B wants to know, are you surprised of the line being only 7.5? I'm not, just because I don't think Notre Dame has proven a whole lot from a bookmaker point of view through two games. And I think I even asked Marcus Freeman this question this week and phrased it this way. How good are you? Do you know yet? He's like, you know, I don't want to say that the Navy and Tennessee State games don't mean anything, but I think Notre Dame's own staff knows that it may take a minute or two against a Power 5 opponent to sort of get a sense of like, all right, how good are we? There are parts of the team that I think have proven themselves, that, you know, they've proven that they've shown will be durable regardless of the step up in competition. I'm not sure if, you know, offensive line play is one of those. I think corner play is outstanding. I think that, you know, somebody like, you know, Jaden Mickey has shown himself to be, I think, a capable third or fourth corner. I think the nickel play of Clarence Lewis and Thomas Harper has been really good. So it's just a skepticism of Notre Dame that, like, again, they're on the road against a Power 5 team. And if you factor in what the 3-point home field advantage, they're, you know, 10.5-point favorites. I think it's a decent amount of respect for Notre Dame, but the bookmakers would like to see a little bit more from the Irish, because it's just, it's not always apples to apples when you're going from a service academy and an FCS team to a Power 5 team. Dylan S. wants to know, are you concerned with Audric Estime's ball security considering the rain? Yeah, I am a little bit. And I know that Estime has been upfront about, like, look, I'm not a fumbler. I haven't had fumbling problems. But when you fumble against Stanford and you fumble against Navy, you got a fumbling issue. You sort of never quite know when it's going to come back. Hopefully, for Notre Dame's sake, it doesn't come back at all. But, you know, when Audric Estime, whenever he's playing in the pros, ball security will be sort of like in the graphic on ESPN about pros and cons. Ball security will be one of those cons. It's just, it's hard to live this down or grow out of it and make people forget about it once it happens. So would I ever predict Audric Estime to fumble in a game? No. But I do think it's something to watch, especially like when he gets those big runs to the second level and he's bowling over a linebacker and then spins. I think it's sort of a moment where he naturally, you forget about ball security because you think about like, oh, am I going to score a touchdown here? So it's something to track tomorrow. In some ways, I don't know, maybe the rain will make him hyper aware of ball security, if that makes any sense. I'm not sure that it does. But this weekend, I would like to see him go fumble free. And then maybe we can have, you know, it's like one of those signs in the factory of two games since Audric Estime's last fumble. We can just update that during the course of the season. John W., hopefully this is the same John W. that was trying to ask a question in the queue, wants to know, big Jaden Thomas fan here. What else do you need from him to consider him a true number one receiver? What are your criteria for a number one receiver? It's a good question. And I have seen flashes of it in camp that he's done number one stuff. And to me, that is go up, make a competitive catch that is, you know, a true 50-50 ball, and you just beat the corner or beat the safety for it. He has that in him. There is no doubt. I think he did it at BYU against BYU last year. You know, can he do it on a consistent basis when, you know, there's no Michael Mayer out there and Notre Dame actually needs it? That's what I want to see. But I think that Jaden Thomas will, you know, maybe he's a 1A receiver, if there's such a thing. You know, it's like when you think about Notre Dame number one receivers, who are we thinking about? We're thinking about Chase Claypool at the end of his career, senior year Miles Boykin, sophomore junior year Will Fuller, Golden Tate, Michael Floyd. I guess technically every team has to have a number one receiver just logically, and Jaden Thomas is it. But, you know, can you be a bailout player for Notre Dame's offense when Sam Hartman needs it? And it's like, if you looked at this offense and thought, all right, it's 3rd and 12. We need somebody to go up and make a competitive catch, sort of against all odds a little bit. Who would that player be? I think it would be Jaden Thomas. Would he make the play? I don't know. But Notre Dame has had plenty of, like, quote unquote, number ones in the past where if that ball was in the air, you knew that player was going to go get it. Sometimes they were a tight end like Mayer or Tyler Eifert before him, where you could throw it up and just hope. Jaden Thomas isn't there for me. I don't know if he's going to get there this season. I think that is fine. I think he's still going to have a very, very good season, and he should lead Notre Dame in catches and yards. Maybe he'll lead them in touchdowns as well. We'll see. But I'm a big Jaden Thomas fan. It's just having covered Notre Dame for this long and seeing Floyd, Tate, Fuller, Boykin, Claypool, you know, Mayer, Eifert, those players made big-time competitive catches in huge spots. And I'm not talking about Navy. You know, NC State, Ohio State, USC, you know, if they needed, you know, Clemson, maybe they needed at Louisville. I don't know. But that's the kind of stuff that I'd like to see from him before saying, boom, true number one. All right, Sean B., another general question, if you can. If the season is very successful, can Marcus Freeman keep the band together with a combination of raises / promotions to run game coordinator, pass game coordinator, etc.? I know Marcus Freeman doesn't directly control the money, but continuity from the staff would be a huge help long term. I don't know, because if Notre Dame has a successful season, its assistants are going to get picked off for better jobs, as they would anywhere. I don't think it's a uniquely Notre Dame thing, in a way that I don't think that raises and title promotions are going to change a whole lot. Like, here would be a scenario for me that I think would be okay for Notre Dame. Let's say, you know, Dylan McCulley moves on after this year. Could he bounce back to the NFL? That's possible. Can you give Chancey Stuckey more responsibility in that room to sort of keep him around and keep him developing? I think so. But can you keep everybody here? That's a tougher ask. Will Gino Guidulli get an offensive coordinator offer after this year? That's a possibility. But I think it's one of the benefits or the boosts of having more coaches that have worked with Freeman in the past and have some sense of loyalty to him is, like, hopefully we won't see guys looking to make the first move and thinking more about, like, okay, what's the right move? And I know Notre Dame and working for Marcus Freeman are two things that I want to continue to have on my resume. But, like, you know, on the defensive side of the ball, is Al Washington going to go anywhere? Probably not. Mike Mickens, probably not. Chris O'Leary, I know he interviewed with the Ravens last year. Probably not. You know, but is Al Golden going to stay for a third year when – you know, he would like to get back in the head coaching game at some point. That, I think, is much more touch and go. You know, if I was Freeman, you got to have an eye out for who your next defense coordinator is already. You know, offensively, I think Jared Parker's not going anywhere either at the coordinator level. So I think that Notre Dame will lose probably a couple assistants just because on average they lose a couple assistants every year. I think their defense coordinator is probably going to be one of them if I had to bet money on it right now. But I do think that loyalty to Freeman, because they have familiarity with him, will help. And I do think, like, the narrative that Notre Dame won't pay or they're under market value is false. And, you know, Notre Dame will step up to the plate. If money is an issue, I think Notre Dame will pay it for coaching salaries. I think I've been doing that for the last few years. And then when they lose guys like, you know, say Tommy Reese last year to Alabama, that was not a money issue, it was an opportunity issue. I would like to see the band be kept together a little bit longer. Although I think that it might be tough with coordinator. I've been covering Notre Dame for 23 years. I think I've covered maybe one fourth year coordinator, and I haven't covered a ton of third year coordinators either. Shay M wants to know, if you can choose only one of the following to happen: one, Tobias Merriweather scores a 50 yard TD pass and our Vipers get zero sacks, or two, Tobias has zero catches and our Vipers have four sacks, what would you choose? The four sacks, easy. Because I think that Notre Dame has found a way to make the passing game work, whether Tobias is an integral part of it or not. It's very hard to make your pass rush worth if your Vipers aren't part of that. I know they blitz Maris Leafau and J.D. Bertrand, and they do a good job. You know, I think Gervonta Jean-Baptiste has been playing better lately. But if the Vipers, especially if it's Burnham and Tui Halamaka to go with Botello, that would be the one. Because I think it's like, it's very hard to lose a game with four sacks. It's really not that hard to lose a game with a 50-yard touchdown. So I think it's the four sacks would bode extremely well for the outcome tomorrow. All right, I'm going to go back to the queue. Jacob K., we're going to try this one more time. All right, I see you on my screen, Jacob K. Can you hear me? If you can, go ahead and ask your question.
Hey, Pete. Thanks for doing this. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I've always wanted to say that on a radio show. I was just hopped on, so I hope this question hasn't been asked and answered already. But shifting gears a little bit from talking about the game back to everyone's favorite topic of conference realignment, I know you and a couple other athletic writers have talked about specific, football-only conferences and going down that route and having other sports being more the traditional regional-based conferences. Do you think that if that scenario were to come to play, it would be sustainable just based on the differences in athletics departments' budgets that would result in different contracts? Obviously, the football conferences are going to get much higher TV contracts, and how that spillover adjusts and affects the non-revenue sports and how well they can compete in their regional conferences?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I'll be honest with you, I have no earthly idea how it would work. I think it makes the most sense. That doesn't mean it's going to work, because like what in college athletics is making sense these days? Very little. I do think, like, look, if you could go back to what the Pac-12 looked like before, then I think that you would have, you know, in the ACC back to what it looked like before, SMU and, you know, Stanford and Cal hopped in, or, you know, the Big Ten without Washington, Oregon, USC, and UCLA. Like, I think we would all be better off as, you know, fans of college athletics. And I think the sports, you know, overall would be a lot better off. So it would take such a grand bargain in college athletics to make that happen. It'd be like rewriting the tax code for the federal government. It sounds like a good idea, right? But to actually implement it and break all the eggs that you would have to make that omelet come to be, I don't see how it's possible. It's kind of one of those things that it probably sounds better in a think tank than it does in a boardroom. And unfortunately, college athletics, as everyone on this live room could tell you, really lacks for leadership. To have someone stick their neck out and say, like, I want to do this, really, really, really difficult. So I like the idea of it. I think if Notre Dame was in a football-only conference with, you know, Ohio State, Michigan State, you know, you could throw in some, you know, maybe in North Carolina, some AC schools in there to get the basketball vibes going. I think that'd be good entertainment. It wouldn't feel like Notre Dame was being pushed into a conference necessarily, but how it would all work, I have a very, very difficult time seeing. So Ted P. wants to know, you said recently in a podcast that you're from Michigan. Where in Michigan? Any thoughts about our Lions last night? I grew up in Grand Rapids, so about 2 hours north of South Bend. My mom went to Michigan State. My dad went to Michigan for grad school. So I was kind of more of a Big Ten fan growing up. And yeah, I also grew up on the Lions. As a Lions fan, I'm old enough that I remember when Barry Sanders was drafted, and that would be the only reason you ever watched the Lions. It's funny, when I interviewed Joe Montana in Dublin at the Guinness Warehouse, I was just wrapping up the interview and I said, hey, I was a huge fan of yours as a kid, you know, love the 49ers. And he's like, where did you grow up? I said, in Michigan. He's like, well, how the 49ers? I think, 'cause the Lions were terrible. So it was bizarre to watch the Lions win a game that I have never seen them win in my lifetime, to go on the road and beat the Super Bowl champs. I'm used to them losing that 45-10 and Barry Sanders having 10 carries for 22 yards. So that was pretty wild to watch as somebody who grew up in Michigan. Joe F., hey, Pete, is Notre Dame doing anything to improve on the game fan experience this year, particularly for Ohio State? I don't have the specific answer for you on this one, but it is a story that I'm working on for Ohio State Week. I sat down with somebody in ticketing. I sat down with somebody in the business office this week to talk about how they're trying to keep Red out of the stadium. That story should probably run Monday or Tuesday of Ohio State Week, so not that far in the distance. It is sort of philosophically something Notre Dame is trying to move toward, instead of talking about ticket buyers as fans or customers, talking about them as members, and to sell the idea of, if you sold your ticket to Ohio State game, yeah, you would be making money, but you're missing more than just the 3.5 hours of the game. You're missing stuff going on campus on Friday night, whether it be other athletic events, maybe a pep rally. You're missing stuff on Saturday on campus that's going on. I'm not entirely sure what the specifics are of those. I mean, if anyone, I don't know if anyone here came to the Tennessee State game last weekend, but they had sort of a party in the stadium on Friday night with food trucks. And I think there was a band in there that seemed somewhat lively. So they're trying to do that to get people to look at game weekends as more than just the game. Will that impact attendance at Ohio State? I don't know. But they're definitely putting some time into it, thinking like, all right, how do we get people to come and keep their tickets opposed to selling them? And I think they're hopeful that one of the ways that they'll do that is to make the game weekends more than just about the game. Brian J., will the performance of the offensive line this weekend make or break your outlook for the season? Would a lackluster third game be cause for alarm or shakeup? I'm hoping for a dominant run game in the rain and a major statement to the offensive line. I wouldn't say make or break. It's hard for me to see Notre Dame being a legit college football playoff contender if the offensive line doesn't take it up a level or two. And look, we've watched that happen before. You know, the 2018, it was a very good offensive line. I don't know if it was great, but it was bad at the beginning of the season. You know, they were struggling with Vanderbilt and Ball State, and then they figured it out and got on a nice run to the college football playoff. You know, the 2020 line, I think, had some similarities there. The 2017 line was not destroying people at the beginning of the season. We all watched the Georgia game, right? Like, nobody came away from that thing and like, oh, dominant offensive line. You know, 2015, that line had 3 top 10 picks, a second round pick, and a bunch of guys still playing in the NFL on top of that. You know, were they dominant when they went to Virginia? Not really. So I think that the offensive line, and that Virginia was game 2 that year, I think the offensive line needs to be given some room to grow. That's not to say that, you know, I can't sit here and we can't sit there and say, like, they need to grow. They do. I think giving them some space to grow is wise. Game 3 is a good time to show that. If the line struggles tomorrow, it would be a little bit of a warning sign. I don't think it would be make or break, but it's kind of one of those things where I want to see the line play well, because then that was going to lead you to believe that Notre Dame has a very, very good chance to beat Ohio State later this month. All right, we'll go to Keith C. for our next call from the queue. Keith C., you're on stage. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, Pete. Thanks. I really appreciate the five-headed running back monster that we currently have, but do you see maybe the number 2 and number 3 backs maybe getting a bit more carries there in place of number 4 and number 5 as the season goes on?
I think that there is a big talent gap between, I think 1 is very good. I think 2 and 3 are actually closer to 1 than maybe the staff or like the fan base would just come to recognize, only because Audric Estime is a known quantity and very fun to watch run. But I think that Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price are legit big time backs. And Tommy Reese told me this last summer before Jadarian popped his Achilles, and Dela McCullough has said this to people privately this offseason, that they feel like Jadarian might be the most talented back on the team. There is no doubt that Jeremiah Love is the fastest back on the team. And I think I mentioned this at the beginning of the live room. Like, it sounds weird that Jabron Payne might be your best short yardage back, but he leads the team in third and fourth down conversions and seems to have a little bit of a niche there. So I feel bad for Devin Ford out with a concussion, but I think that's one where like the fifth back probably gets less work moving forward. And I'd like to see the fourth back get a little bit less work moving forward. Maybe the fourth back is just like a specialist in third and short, if that's Payne. But I don't want Notre Dame to go through the season and we're sitting here talking about how Jadarian Price is averaging 3 carries per game. That doesn't seem like a good use of his skill set, nor does it seem that way with Jeremiah Love. I like how they're using him in the pass game so far. You know, Jadarian Price cut off, you know, kind of a bit of a broken play just from Steve Angeli was still impressive. I think that getting Jeremiah Love in space makes a ton of sense because he's got elite speed. But I would like to see the running back rotation cut down maybe go from 5 to 4 and then maybe go from 4 to 3. I don't know if that will happen this weekend. Maybe this is a good weekend to ride Audric for 20, 22 carries and have these younger backs watch a little bit more. But I think that keeping 5 backs involved, like, it sounds good in theory, but I think Notre Dame loses too much from a talent point of view when they get to number 4 and number 5. All right. Michael P. wants to know, should we be concerned about Clemson having an obvious wide receiver problem and being Coach Stuckey's alma mater? I think that that is a legit concern. However, Notre Dame really should not lose its wide receivers coach to another school to coach the same position. Garrett Riley is a young offensive coordinator there. I'm not sure what responsibilities would be available to him. Chancey, Clemson is very near and dear to his heart. I don't think he'll be who would just automatically run back there. I think Notre Dame would have a chance to counter it. But I do think if Clemson came with an offer there, that that would be something that Chancey would at least have to, I don't know, think about, because that's, you know, Clemson is a big, big part of his life. So we will wrap it up on that. Thanks for being with us for another episode of the Shamrock Live. I'm going to try to get back to the noon start next week, home game, no flights out of South Bend International Airport down to RDU. And I'm pleased to say also the weather has improved quite a bit. So maybe hurricane conditions have passed through and we'll be blessed with a dry game tomorrow where Notre Dame gets to show off a little bit more. So until next week at noon, when we recap this one a little bit and preview Central Michigan, I have a feeling we'll be talking a lot of Ohio State at that point too. Thanks for being with us on this episode of the Shamrock Live.